It's episode 7 of Dead FM. Happy New Year, everybody. Today on the show, Ben Dobbins and I sat down and reviewed what's going to happen in the movies this year. We also have kind of an extended news section because, holy hell, folks, we got a lot of stuff coming up this year. And now the news.
All right, here we go.
You're listening to Dead FM, and I'm Don Early.
And I'm Ben Dobbins.
Today in the news, 2,000 sets of Demon Hunters dice arrived at my door this week. We have pictures online. I've never seen that much dice together in a single home before. Also, turns out 2,000 sets of dice are pretty freaking heavy.
Reminds me of all the minis we had show up for Gamers 3.
Yeah.
I hope you sorted them first.
That's the nice thing about where we got them. They were pre-sorted, pre-packaged, and in their correct boxes. So, no problems there.
You can just bleep yourself off.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, Chris Odie and I delivered Attacking the Darkness, all of the footage to the editors at Jaya Productions. They are the same team who did the House Rules editing for us, along with Sarah Sanders Odie. And they are now in full swing. We are aiming for an August release of our newest feature film.
Fantastic. Nerdycrap.com. We've been talking about this for a little while. Still going to be a ways before we launch, but we're aiming to launch by end of January. We might launch with a small inventory to start just to test the system and then expand the catalog from there out. More on that in the coming weeks.
Meanwhile, Hat Trick Pony Improv, the new improv troupe from Chris Odie, Christian Doyle, and many more familiar faces, is planning on launching this February with monthly live shows at the Lakewood Playhouse in Tacoma. They'll have plenty of new details soon, but what I can tell you is that the shows will be live streamed to the internet. They, during rehearsals, will be developing comedy sketch ideas for scripts that we will produce on a monthly basis and release on the Dead Gentleman and Zoe YouTubes. And they'll also be helping to create some scripts for
Dead FM,
which we're listening to.
That's right. So we definitely have a plan for more audio sketches. It's definitely a favorite thing that we like to do here, and be nice to have some extra fodder.
So we'll get that writing team going. That will be the first thing that our new Patreon campaign helps to fund. That is tentatively launching in February. The video is about the only thing we have left to do. It's being directed by Gabriel Gonda, who did Dark Dungeons for us.
Very funny man as well, and very talented director. So tell us just very briefly, Ben, what the hell is going on with this Patreon? What's the whole point of this thing?
Well, the whole point is it's the evolution of our Phase 2 program, but it's a third-party platform, which means that we never have to write another line of broken code.
That's right.
So for all the people who have been loyal Phase 2 supporters who have been kicked off by PayPal and unable to renew, because PayPal's dropping a few dozen people a month, this should solve the problem, should give us a place where everybody can connect, can talk, can make it super easy to deliver digital rewards. And we have plans to integrate it with a backer kit for our upcoming Kickstarters, which is super exciting.
Yeah. So those of you who are familiar with the Patreon campaign with the Demon Hunters roleplay or Demon Hunters webcomic, you're going to have a very similar experience over at the Zombie Orpheus Patreon campaign.
Speaking of Demon Hunters.
Yeah. Writing for the Demon Hunters role-playing game, A Comedy of Terrors, is in full swing. Folks, I can't get anybody on the writing team to return my calls. They are eyeballs deep in their typewriters and other writing instruments. We do have a first writing milestone that ends here at January 31st, hoping to have a rough draft of the whole book by then. We'll see. But we're getting close, and I know they are hard at work.
And whatever you do, don't ask Jimmy McMichael about his writing implement.
That's right.
So, speaking of writing, the Strowler's World Bible is now being reviewed by more producers, and we sent out a draft of it last month to the Zoe Phase 2 community. And we're giving people a chance to start learning what that world is about, how it's going to work. In addition to the pilot, which is currently being written, there are three more producing teams working on Strowler's content. And this is a big shared open world, so as you may have heard before, everybody's going to have an invitation to come and play.
Now, Ben, is there any information about Strowler's or about the world out that exists online right now?
There's not a lot online. Sharp-eyed and researcher viewers could probably pull up some old material off of the archive.org website from what used to be online. But we've really reconfigured the project since we first began speaking in 2010. And the purpose of that was to make it as accessible as possible.
Sure.
If you have access to an interesting location set in the modern day and can come up with one or two fantastic elements, whether it's fantasy or sci-fi or horror or whatever else, you have basically what you need in order to tell a Strowler story. So the bar for entry and for producing in this world, you don't have to go out and create an entire world from scratch, and that means more people can come play.
Great. The Demon Hunters webcomic is back in full swing from winter break and is getting close to wrapping up its first story arc, coming up probably by March, actually. I think we're going to be done with the first story, and then we get right into the next arc. The first pages, I think, are 42 or 44 pages for the first story, with following stories being approximately 22 pages each.
Now, I have to ask, obviously, we've seen Gabriel building his team with the story. Can we expect any more team members to show up, or is that a surprise or a spoiler?
Well, the whole story is getting the team together. So by the end of it, we definitely will be having a full team and some very interesting things happening. So I'm not going to spoil it, but so that's in the works.
Oh, right. So Journey Quest.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff happening with Journey Quest. People want to know what the hell is happening with Journey Quest.
Right. Well, we've really been trying to figure out how we can get it in front of more eyeballs.
Right.
And Matt Vansell had the brilliant idea. He was watching some old BBC miniseries and said, this show makes perfect sense as seasons of like a BBC-style show.
Right. So what that means is, if you're familiar with Sherlock, that could be three episodes that are very long, or something a little bit more traditional like Blackadder.
Or Red Dwarf,
something more like six episodes.
Which is what we've done with seasons one and two. Last week, based on Matt's notes, I sat down and recut seasons one and two of Journey Quest as six 23-minute episodes.
Interesting.
Which is great for television.
Mm-hmm.
And that also happens to be a format that will actually allow us to submit the show to Netflix.
Right.
And to iTunes. And the big thing we've discovered about Netflix is Netflix means eyeballs, and eyeballs mean more fans and more people getting introduced to the show.
That's
so
right.
We're getting that out there. And in addition, RenewJQ, RenewJourneyQuest.com, has now passed 2,000 signups.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to launch a Kickstarter, we need to get to 4,300.
Right.
That's the size of the campaign to be able to hit our production budget.
Right.
However, I'm actually heading up to meet at an undisclosed location next Saturday.
Right.
We're really working on plans to figure out, okay, if we can raise 200 now, where can another 200 come from so that we can get into production?
Right. Because you're thinking on an average, 2,000 pledges, an average of $100 a pledge or so. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Based on our prior Kickstarters, our average tends to be about $97 to $101 per pledge.
Okay,
so I feel pretty comfortable saying 2,000 backers means around 200,000.
Okay, so you're thinking that the season three would be Correct. Approximately 430,000 on a Kickstarter.
On a Kickstarter. But if we don't...
with gap financing, we don't have to pay as much fees.
Or if we go directly to all those subscribers and we bypass Kickstarter,
right,
for example, we could be able to put much more money directly into the production.
Into production.
And
great.
we're really looking at film incentives. We're looking at, you know, basically all of the different options that are out there to help supplement the fan funding without putting us into a position where we are beholden to someone else who can cancel the show.
Yeah.
So pretty much just looking for free money.
Yeah. And so that's good. So that means that I know that you and I sat down and looked at a number of options on how to get this to actually into production. I'm really excited for what you are going to go meet about. And Journey Quest is happening. We have a full plan. And first part of that is this BBC style miniseries to get it more eyeballs on the property.
Exactly. And I'll probably get in trouble for this later, but based, if the pieces come together the way we want, we would be looking at being in production in September, October of this year.
Not going to hold you to that, but
please.
Yeah, we'll see. DG Game Night resumes in February. We were going to do it last night, a-holes, but all my players basically wussied out.
Oh, you mean Seth Davis?
Seth Davis and Jimmy McMichael said, I have to write your damn RPG. I gave him a buy on that one.
We can probably give Seth a pass, too.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. He keeps promising and he keeps canceling, so, you know.
Oh, this is the perfect place to give him a hard time for it.
Yeah. So, anyway, we're going to come back in February, hopefully. If not, then I'll probably have to last-minute switch it, and I'll see if Cam's got something he can show us. I might even have Cam run the next damn DG game night. We'll see. So that's happening. House rules.
House rules. We've released 17 episodes. We have 3 episodes to go.
Holy crap, really?
3 episodes to go. We are going to finish up on episode 20. We met with the editing team yesterday. It's a huge amount of content.
Yeah.
So
I've really enjoyed, even though I was vaguely, and you're going to get to sort of surprise see me there at the end of the show. I actually have not even seen this. When you folks see it, I will see it for the first time myself.
It's been 12 years yeah. since we shot that show.
Yeah. So I've been really impressed with how that show has evolved and come together. The story is pretty interesting. So if you haven't checked it out, House Rules, HouseRulez.tv, you can head over to the Dead Gentleman YouTube channel, and we've got a full playlist right there. The other really great thing is about the DVD authoring.
That's right. So for those of you who have been involved with Zoe Kickstarters in the past, we've kind of taken all of that learning experience and all those growing pains from the mm-hmm. Kickstarters and brought them to House Rules and built the campaign with Dead Gentleman. And I'm very happy to announce that Dead Gentleman is on track to deliver the Kickstarter rewards to the backers on schedule.
That's right. Part of that also is that we have a fantastic editing team, and we've got a pretty solid plan to get those products in place. Chris Odie is a crack shot in managing the project, so he's doing great. And I'm going to help with my distribution background to help fulfill that too. So, you know, between that and the Demon Hunters role-playing game, you'll get to see if DG's any good at this Kickstarter fulfillment crap. So, final bit of news here, folks. We are aiming for a early to mid-March launch for a Kickstarter for the Dortness Rising Blu-ray edition. I teased that earlier on in the year. We were thinking we could probably launch it this January, but it's just been too damn much work to get everything done. So, mid-March is looking like a good time for us to pull that together. And I'm excited. Ben, you've been kind of working behind the scenes on right. some stretch goals.
Yeah, well, you know, every Kickstarter, it's a process of really kind of budgeting what you need to get the right. core awesome thing out the door. But then the fun part is thinking, what more could we do? And I don't know how much I can spoil here.
Yeah, it's definitely gamers related stretch goals. I did actually tease earlier that I have a gamers one stretch goal idea. Mm-hmm. So that's on the works.
And also a stretch goal relating to Gamers 3 that should make fans of that film delirious with excitement.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing if we can even get to that level. That's going to be awesome.
So start saving now.
Lots of good stuff. So, but the bottom line, basically, Darkness Rising Blu-ray Kickstarter is really meant to help pull us out of the red from all of our distribution nightmares and to get you a kick-ass Blu-ray, because basically, damn it, I want one. And that's really the reason why we're doing this, because if I want something, then I need to, you know, throw a Kickstarter so we can go do it.
You know, I was wondering, Don, thinking, you know, I think we have about, after fulfilling Gamers 3, we have about 25 Mound of Dead Bard minis left.
And only 25?
Only 25.
Oh.
Because so many people added them on as extras at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not really enough to, I'm throwing this at Don live here. He hasn't heard this proposal yet. Don, okay. My proposal is that we launch a Kickstarter this month just to do a reprint of the Mound of Dead Bard minis.
Wow. Okay. I would be interested in that. I would be interested to find out, do you still have all of the specs on where we manufactured them? And
they
still have the molds?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they still have the molds, then shit, that'll be easy.
Exactly. Wouldn't it be fun to do an easy Kickstarter?
We'd need like $500.
I know. See?
Okay. I'd be into that. All right. Well, think about that. Let us know what you think. If you'd like a Mound of Dead Bards mini, because that is true. We don't really have the money to... go ahead and order a new print of it. But if you paid us in advance, we'd probably do it. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's the news. Ben, I'm going to surprise you a little bit. You just surprised me in the news segment. you sent over some music to me of a particular concert that you did,
right?
And I wondered, I think just to break up things a bit, I'm gonna play one of those pieces.
Sure.
Do you want to set this up? What's the context?
The context is, well, I'll put it in the terms that I use to piss off my musician friends.
Great.
I've been supporting my film career with my music career for years.
It's actually pretty true.
So it's this whole other facet to what I do. Played with a jazz band for years, did a was music director for a show back in 2014.
Sean Bendixson had a lot to say about your instruments.
Wow, I should actually listen to the podcast. If only I listened to podcasts. I also played for 6 years for Lutheran Church down in Tacoma. And after moving to Bellingham, it became clear that the Tacoma commute every Sunday was just not tenable in the long term. So I gave a farewell concert. And to contextualize whatever music Don chooses to play, basically used that as an opportunity to play the kind of music that I could never get away with playing as a prelude in church.
There you go. Okay, so this is a prelude that is inappropriate for church.
Dead FM.
2015 is going to be kind of a kick-ass year for movies. You know, we've got...
Not just our movies.
No, I know. In general. We've got some great stuff for us, but holy crap. You know, Avengers, Age of Ultron.
Star Wars
comes out in December, which is sort of off the track. They typically have, when the prequels were coming out, they were coming out in the May time slot. But.
Well, you know, that's my claim to fame.
What's that?
This is my secret shame. The only time I've been on the front page of the Seattle Times was in an interview leading up to Star Wars Episode 1, because I was one of the crazy people who was going to camp out to get tickets for opening night at the Cinerama.
I actually talked about a lot of that experience a couple of podcasts ago. Again, you should listen to the podcast. It's we talk about shit. But no, so we... obviously the crazy internet eruption around the teaser trailer for Star Wars. I still think that the broadsword style, lightsaber looks pretty damn cool.
I buy it.
I'm into it. I think it's great.
Even if Stephen Colbert's explanation was actually a satirical trolling.
Mm-hmm.
Which is inconceivable to think about coming from Stephen Colbert.
Right.
Even if we were being trolled, I'm willing to go with his explanation.
It's pretty freaking good, you know. Age of Ultron, I gotta say, I am super excited about Ultron. Honestly.
James Spader, right?
James Spader.
Man, I will watch anything that guy's in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the chillingness of the child singing, you know, Ain't No Strings on Me, and that very, very well done trailer, I think.
The only thing that really bugs me about it is it feels like what we know about upcoming Marvel movies has changed so dramatically from here's a little hint at the end and we're trying to figure out what's coming to, you know, they've announced... Yeah, sure, Ultron's happening, but, I mean, Infinity Gauntlet is coming up, Inhumans are coming up, there's all this stuff down the road. It kind of, to me, it makes it feel like, well, it's Ultron, but who cares?
Yeah.
Because they've spoiled so, for the people who know these stories, they've spoiled so much about what the meta arc is. Where's the surprise?
Potentially, yeah. But, I mean, I think that one thing I appreciate about... what Marvel's doing, though, is that they are willing to take risks.
Clearly. Yeah. Well, and we saw that with Guardians of the Galaxy. But, I mean, their risk-taking, and again, I've been loving their films, but their risk-taking is also limited. Like, look at what happened with the director turnover on Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, we're talking a brilliant director, the guy who did Shaun of the Dead and...
really good fitting, I mean, the Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright.
You know, who, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim. Really, really appropriate thing. But I got to tell you, Ben, I'm going to have a hard time going to see Ant-Man. Even with the thing, it's the story, it's the approach itself.
Are they changing too much?
Well, so what's happening is I was really, really upset when Hank Pym wasn't part of the original Avengers. So that was a tough thing for me. But I get it, you know.
Or the Wasp.
Right, right. And I get it. But, you know, in this Ant-Man, what they're doing...
It's a heist film, right?
It's a heist film, which I think is great. I think a heist context for it is great. But... Hank Pym is Michael Douglas. He's old. And so...
Well, they're pulling on the storylines from... Basically, it's not the first Ant-Man, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So for me, I really wanted to see what they were going to do with Hank Pym. I love that character so much. Yeah. And I know that he's gone through some very dark incarnations and
did you
domestic
read,
violence. And,
did you read his arcs in the Ultimates line?
I don't know that I did.
Yeah.
But I know that there was some controversy involved.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I'm not full, and I'm not fully versed in Ant-Man, but so what they're doing is they've got, you know, Hank Pym is the sort of the mentor, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Janet is even going to show up.
Well, heaven forbid Marvel include more female superheroes in their
right
movies.
So Scott Lang is the new Ant-Man, and he's being played, of course, by I'm spacing on his name.
We're looking at our cheat sheet here.
Yeah. There he is.
Paul Rudd. Rudd's great.
Yeah, he's terrific. And I think, honestly, Paul Rudd would have made a totally fine Hank Pym.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're going with Scott Lang. That's fine. And we're going to get as the villain, Yellow Jacket.
Oh, okay. See, that this is the thing that bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah.
With superhero movies, especially superhero origin stories, where you're going to have to face your evil twin.
Right.
Hulk is going to fight Angry Hulk. Iron Man is going to fight another Iron Man.
Yeah.
Ant-Man is going to fight a Yellow Jacket.
Right.
It's bullshit.
Well, and
we've seen this story two dozen times.
Yeah. And, I mean, who knows what they're going to do with it. I don't know where they're going to go, but I know that those are the three main elements I'm going to have a hard time with it. And it's the one Marvel film that's going on that I'm really, really struggling with.
It's a fascinating history because as best as people have kind of been able to piece the story together, Edgar Wright ended up leaving the picture because his style was so unique that it didn't fit in with the rest of kind of the Marvel Cinematic
mm-hmm.
Universe.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a mistake, because I think that is a risk that really could have made this for me, made it interesting. But as it is, I mean, it looks gorgeous, but
Peyton Reed is a good director. Did you see Down with Love with Ewan McGregor?
No, I've heard about it, but yeah, I never did.
It's this ridiculous, fluffy kind of 60s era screwball comedy. That's a lot of fun.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm almost positive I'm not going to go see this in the theater. I'll probably.
No kidding.
It. Yeah. I'm just, it's so hard.
I'll be there opening night.
I know you.
But it's a 5-minute walk from my house, so why not?
And you have that little pass thing.
Right.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
The pass, by the way, is not a back door with someone letting me in through the emergency exit of the theater.
Right, right.
Just so we're clear.
Gosh, okay, so I'm done ranting about Ant-Man. Kingsman, you introduced this to me tonight, actually. I hadn't been able to pay attention. This looks fucking great.
It's from Matthew Vaughn, who's done...
I love Matthew Vaughn.
I just saw Days of Future Past recently.
Oh my god.
Super impressed. I guess that wasn't him. Was that him?
Or
was that a new director? I don't remember.
I actually could not look. We'd have to look that up.
Yeah. But I know First Class was amazing, and that really Bryan Singer did Days of Future Past, but he did First Class, which was fantastic.
Right, right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and other great movies. I've got to say, I couldn't get through Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass is hard, but Layer Cake
mm-hmm.
was terrific.
Stardust is fun.
Yeah. Ish. I could leave Stardust.
It is flawed, but fun.
Yeah.
I think of it fondly.
I think for me, First Class and Layer Cake to me is what got Daniel Craig James Bond.
Right.
Well,
and that's kind of what makes this movie look so fun, because it's very much kind of set in that world of international espionage. But mm-hmm. We've had so many grim, grim movies coming out about spies and espionage, and all the superhero movies are getting grim. And here's a colorful, quirky film with a sense of humor that's not afraid to have fun.
Yeah, you know, essentially...
Starring Samuel L. Jackson as the villain.
Right. And not you know, not too typically the type of role you see him in. Although it looks like they give him his Sam Jackson lines, you know, in it here and there. But looking good. I mean, it's a typical older secret agent training some new recruits, and looks like a blast to me. I'm interested.
And there are even a few shots in the trailer of women recruits wearing serious suits, focusing on doing their business instead of looking sexy.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to go see it now.
I'm just excited now.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
All right.
What else is coming up? Chappie.
I don't know anything about Chappie.
Okay. Did you see District 9?
I loved District 9.
Yeah.
I know a lot of... Nathan and I actually had a argument about the plot holes that he said you could drive a semi through in District 9.
Well, I've got to admit, they did leave Tom Bombadil out of District 9. And we will never hear the end of it from Nathan about that.
That they did. But I love District 9. I thought it was really uncomfortable. Cindy, actually, to this day, my wife has some uncomfortableness with the racism that was really dealt with in District 9, and she actually had a great deal of empathy that she felt coming out of that. I think if a movie can do that to you, it's
a film that was coming from a place of anger.
Mm.
You know, real for me at least, really good science fiction identifies stuff that's wrong in the world, mm-hmm. and gives us a way to look at it from a new perspective.
Yeah.
And this dealt with South Africa's history of racism, mm-hmm. While still telling a phenomenal story in a way that sticks with you.
Yeah. So Chappie, what's up with Chappie?
Chappie is...
Looks like a robot.
It's a story about a robot who becomes self-aware, who becomes intelligent, and is kind of trained by, as far as I can tell from the trailer, these kind of people living on the edges of society, the underground, the quirky.
Is it like a Pinocchio story, you think?
I think it might be like a Pinocchio story. And it's a fascinating film because we're seeing just this glut of pictures coming out all of a sudden dealing with the question of emergent AI.
Mm, right.
And what rights does the AI have? And, you know, it's really kind of ripped from the headline stuff. You see what, like, Elon Musk is talking about, thinking that this is a bigger danger than nuclear, nuclear war at this point. I can't talk about how AI-related stories are affecting us directly, other mm-hmm. than to say there's clearly interest from various entities in producing these kinds of stories, and we're hearing that interest directly in our world, and so I've had to do a lot of research into it.
Mm-hmm.
And just on the basis of the research, it makes me very, very interested to kind of see how we address these issues of humanity, of soul, of what brings us together. And from a director who's shown that he can bring kind of this allegorical sensitivity to a kick-ass genre story.
So AI and taking over the world, and do they have souls, and are they going to kill us? Brings us to Terminator Genesis.
Go for it.
You know, and this is one where I've been a big fan of the Terminator series mostly, but I did struggle with...
They were a great two films.
The two films, exactly. I did struggle with Terminator 3, and going back and reading a lot more about what happened with Terminator 3 and what it was going to be... It puts a lot more context for me on why I didn't like it as much. But then also, Terminator Salvation, way huge spectacle of a movie.
Mm-hmm. I skipped it.
And, you know, it's Christian Bale. And I'm sort of anti-Christian Bale these days. He's really gotten me sick of him from Batman, and I just have a hard time with him. It did not do it for me in Salvation. Genesis looks interesting, but it looks like it's kind of doing the same thing that Days of Future Past did, and it's kind of doing that sort of
retcon
Star Trek alternate universe I don't know if it's as full so far as it's retconning, but it's changing the timeline.
It's going into the same record grooves and just digging them deeper.
Yeah, and that's true. And you know, and so now we're sort of going back before Terminator 1 in the timeline.
That timeline's going to get worn out, man. They keep changing it over and over and over again.
And, you know, and now Sarah Connor has, she's younger. She's played by Khaleesi, you know, in Game of Thrones. I can't think of her, the actress's name, but.
This for me is like, this is the prime example of Hollywood trying to develop movies by staring up its own asshole.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so they're bringing Schwarzenegger back as an old Terminator.
Because that makes sense.
You know, I don't know. I'm probably going to see this. Once again, I'm probably not going to see it in the theater, but I'm interested to see what they're going to do. I have a particular interest in these sort of revisionist or alternate timeline type of movies. I enjoyed what they did in Star Trek, and I appreciate that we can enjoy the new Star Trek series.
You can
from a sort of different perspective. But I tell you, if they made a TV show or if they made something, you know, with this new cast or this new, you know, direction, I don't know that I'd follow. It's interesting for a one-off.
Well, at least they're not going in and trying to develop a movie based on yet another theme park ride.
Sure.
Because there's no way a film like that would be worth seeing or would turn out well. Or, by the way, have you heard that the brilliant director Brad Bird is doing Tomorrowland for Disney? I am so excited about this film.
You've got to be fucking kidding me.
I am so serious.
What?
We had a moment of speechlessness here, people.
What the hell is Tomorrowland?
Tomorrowland, based on the Disney theme park. Well, I know,
yeah,
right.
I know, right. But there's a movie?
Okay, there's a movie directed by Brad Bird. Let's look at Brad Bird's track record.
Okay. So
Iron Giant.
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles.
Ratatouille.
Did he do Ratatouille?
Well, according to that one.
Okay. Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol.
Eh, which was okay.
But the man made Iron Giant.
I know, which is so good.
The man made The Incredibles.
Which also is so
good. I had fun with Ghost Protocol. Like, I have not seen a huge misstep from him yet. And what I get from the trailer is this is someone who, he's always been a director who kind of understands a sense of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
With,
yeah.
You know, Iron Giant, you're able to really inhabit the world of, was it Hogarth?
Right.
And his discovery of this friend. And he's able to kind of wrap that sense of the world can still be an amazing place.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a cynic. But he can explore that sense of wonder within the context, you know, of a world on the verge of nuclear war.
Right.
For example, looking at the Cold War, looking at broken families, look at how that's, I mean, he gets it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm willing to go with him.
So it looks like we got George Clooney in this, Hugh Laurie, and Judy Greer. Now that'd be worth seeing.
My only concern is Damon Lindelof.
Oh, from Lost?
From Lost.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, all right.
Because, and this kind of brings us full circle, the J.J. Abrams School of Film Writing, of screenwriting, pisses me the fuck off.
So you and I are definitely in opposite courts in that, because the thing that I really enjoyed Cloverfield.
I did too.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I did too.
As for what it was, I got sucked in hardcore on that one.
I had a great time. I saw it at the Cinerama.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, yeah. We can move on. So what else is coming out this year? Oh, Jurassic World. I don't know that I have much to add to this.
This one is kind of a huge victory for our Washington film community.
Really? Tell me about
it. It is. Because I know basically a ton of my friends went out and worked on this little indie called Safety Not Guaranteed.
Okay.
One of the indies that risked shooting in Washington State, directed by this guy named Colin. And based on the phenomenal work he did directing and the phenomenal work that our local crew did on bringing this movie to life and telling the story and making something unique and amazing, because film is a collaborative act. Based on that, Colin directs this little indie film and gets a call to direct the next Jurassic Park movie.
Wow. Yeah, that is huge.
That is huge. That's really I will see it just based on, I am so thrilled that our film community was a part of helping to launch this guy into the big leagues.
All right, all right. Well, that gives me a different reason to go for it. You know, I'd probably watch the sort of popcorn style movie anyway. And, you know, I do love Chris Pratt. I'm a little afraid that he's going to play the same character in this movie as he did in Guardians. But, you know, I like that character. So it'll be all right. Pan. I actually talked a little bit about Pan in a previous podcast, but I didn't really talk too far. Mainly, I touched on Felicia Day's sort of rant about I'm so bad with names. Usually I have the names in front of me, but who's playing Tiger Lily. Yeah. She's white and Mara, I'm just gonna kill me anyway. And so that's really it. But it looks like a very interesting sort of prequel to Peter Pan.
From a very interesting director.
True.
Say what Joe you like Wright. About Joe Wright. He brings a unique sensibility, and like, the guy is trying. He has ambition, and he's, even if you don't like his movies, you have to respect that they are coherent.
Sure.
And that they express a particular vision and a particular point of view.
Yeah.
I feel like I can go into this movie and not worry that it's going to be more cookie cutter nonsense.
Sure.
And if it is, I'll be doubly disappointed.
Yeah. All right. So that's Pan. So let's see here. Da, 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 da.
Saved the big one for last.
Yeah. 007. My big one here is going to be Spectre, coming out in November. I am ridiculously excited about this. Not only for the very fact that that I've been wondering when they were going to start working with Spectre, if they were going to do that, because now that with the litigation over with Sony, being able to use Blofeld and Spectre, a big debacle. If you don't know anything about it, just, you know, look up lawsuit Thunderball and you'll see a huge decades long fight with Kevin McClory. So Skyfall probably in my top three favorite Bond films. So Casino Royale with Daniel Craig is in my top three. So that's pretty huge.
Considering what a Bond film fan you were before Daniel Craig ever took the mantle.
Correct. Yeah.
I still have a soft spot for GoldenEye, but I'm weird.
You know, GoldenEye is a really good film. I would say GoldenEye is probably in my top five.
I also like The Living Daylights.
I don't like The Living Daylights.
That's okay.
Yeah. But of course, From Russia with Love being probably my softest spot. And, you know, all three of these films are just solid. So I am so excited. I have no idea what they're going to do with Spectre. I'm very interested to see can you scroll back up? I'm so bad with names today. Christopher Waltz. Yeah. So the idea that Christoph Waltz is going to be playing Blofeld. He's listed as a different character, but Blofeld, again, from the novel standpoint, if you totally get that there's a lot more to this character. Frankly, I'm kind of I thought it was Skyfall that they were pulling from You Only Live Twice, the novel, and having some very interesting pieces from that. He was in the Orient. So they're doing good things. To the rumors and the ideas about, and once again, I'm going to butcher his name, but
Idris Elba.
Yeah. Idris Elba being cast as the next James Bond. My gut reaction kind of went along with, and I'm sorry to say this, but it was probably the only time I was initially going to agree with Rush Limbaugh. where I just, you know,
it was a goatee, wasn't it? You just can't imagine Bond with a beard.
With a beard, yeah, I don't know about that. No, it's just, I talked about this earlier. You know, I had a hard time with, Michael Clark Duncan being Kingpin. Mm-hmm. When the character has been of a certain, you know, appearance for all these years, that you have been ingrained with that character for so long, that it's tough to make that switch for you. Interestingly enough, though, again, calling out my own racism on this, I didn't have a problem with a black Felix Leiter, the CIA agent in the Daniel Craig series, James Bond's CIA best friend. So I could probably be convinced, no problem.
Well, and this is where I tend, my default perspective tends to be, Hollywood and these, you know, the latest Sony hacking scandal has really proved this. Hollywood is fucking racist.
Yeah, that's true.
And misogynist.
And we've talked about that.
Anything that can begin to bring even a slight better amount of representation of points of view and colors and genders and anything kind of beyond.
Yeah.
Straight, white, middle-aged men who think that their perspective is the default perspective.
Right.
I'm willing to go there.
Yeah.
Without even giving it a second thought. Because, frankly, I want to see a damn good story. And if we can see a little more justice, if we can see a little more moving beyond racism, because racism is still such a huge factor in this country, and across the world. Sexism is still a huge factor. Homophobia, transphobia, you name it. You know, it. And movies, this is my soapbox. Movies are an incredibly powerful tool for putting us into other people's shoes, to see the world from their perspective, to take the other, the person who looks different or scary, and give us the opportunity to empathize with their perspective.
Right.
They have the opportunity to bring us together, and it's worth making the extra effort.
Sure.
To go there. And part of that effort, you know, if you're coming to it from the perspective of, you know, being a hetero white male, like you and I, or most of the people in Hollywood, is not just to be aware of the issue, but to actively take steps.
Well, and
to go beyond that.
And then to go back to Idris, you know, his work on Luther is phenomenal.
The guy's brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, so obviously he'd be a fan. But again, I have to wonder, and again, they could do this because they've done it with white guys the entire time. Where they switch out the Bond actor, but other characters in the world remain the same casting, and you just go with it, you know.
It's the problem that we're going to experience with any long-term franchise.
Yeah.
The Marvel world is going to have to face these same issues. Do they eventually just...
Well, they're already doing it with Spider-Man.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But, like, Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
when he's no longer playing Iron Man,
yeah.
Do they bring in a new Tony Stark?
Right.
Or do they pass the mantle on to someone else?
Right, right.
Do you get Rhodey taking over?
Yeah.
Or whatever the case might be. And Bond has gotten away with it by just ignoring.
Yeah. Basically. Well, and that's kind of British too, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Doctor Who sort of figured out how to retcon its way through that, you know, and
it's an issue we've had to face
yeah.
with DG and with Zoe before.
Right.
There are roles for one reason or another that we have recast.
Yeah.
Either because people weren't available or whatever the case mm-hmm. might be.
Well, and I think that's another thing too. There's been a lot of questions from our fans about continuity and, you know, is this, you know, if they were played by the same actors, does that mean that these characters are, you know, related or similar or whatever? And, you know, you got to remember it on one particular level that as we began as Dead Gentleman Productions, Monty Python was firm in our brains about how we do this. It was a group of players to play a lot of different characters. Now, it's been interesting as things have evolved that story ideas revolving particular continuities are interesting.
But it brings up all kinds. I mean, the flip side of it is when you have actors playing multiple roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Part of one of the discussions that I was having earlier today is, can you have New Moon and Lodge in the same room?
Right. Yeah.
They are completely different characters who happen to be played by the same actor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we played to that in Demon Hunters 1 when you... when you were shooting Gabriel and Nathan was in a play, and there was a photo of Nathan in that play, and Gabriel sees that actor,
yeah.
You know. I think it'll be interesting with the properties we have on the horizon here for this year, how we're going to choose to carve that story out and to explore and experiment what we're going to do with that.
Yeah. And also to, you know, the same deal that the people with Bond or Marvel or wherever make is when you recast or when you have a situation at what point do you let the audience know, no, really, it's just that this actor's playing multiple characters.
Right.
Or, no, really, it's just that this role had to be recast for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a difference between the grand plan for the story
right.
and here's who we wanted to play this role.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that, you know, Ben Davis and Don Early here, it would only make it even more official if Matt Vansell were here, but there is a plan for various continuity elements, but... there is also not a grand master plan for actors playing specific roles to be interconnected. It's always going to come down to the story, availability, resources.
And there are things that we want to do.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
If we're able to, you know, like there are payoffs that we planned that might mm-hmm. not pay off for another 10 years.
Right.
But that's, you know, assuming that the actor is available in 10 years to to take that element and pull the pieces together and make you say, oh my God.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like we're ignoring it, but anyway, I feel like some of our fans give us more credit than we deserve.
A lot of it is intentional. Some of it is accidental.
It's like gaming, you know, when your players come up with a better idea than you did as you're GMing, and you go, yeah, that's what I meant.
I know I always say this, but I just can't wait for the moment that we pay off that one shot in Darkness Rising.
Oh, yeah. You know, I obviously am very excited about that.
You should be.
And I think that we've definitely got a lot of different ideas of how to make that work.
And frankly, that's one that we might hear more about after the Blu-ray's out.
Yeah.
With a higher resolution.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting that I don't think anyone has brought it up yet.
I've had one fan mention to me that that fan had had seen it and had, but that they didn't want to spoil it for anyone else, so they weren't talking about it.
Oh, okay. Well, if you know what we were talking about, I'm not going to tell you where it is or whatever, but there is a particular Easter egg in the Gamers Darkness Rising that we shot as a potential, and we're actually very excited and interested in actually making that pay off.
Pay it off in Gamers 4.
Yeah.
Whenever that happens.
Right.
So that's a look at kind of the big genre pictures in 2015.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a ton of indies coming out that we didn't even have a chance. Well, indies and smaller pictures and stuff. Like Michael Mann has a new picture coming.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see Selma. I can't wait to see The Imitation Game. But I think that's probably enough for tonight to kind of give us a pop culture overview.
And yeah.
And then contribute our own little part to it as stuff comes out and we fund more stuff moving forward.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, once again, I am anxious to read your questions and try and get people to answer them on the show. So question and answers, anything DG or Zombie Orpheus related, about any projects, about any story ideas or questions, or just, you know, relationship advice. Should you buy, you know, this particular mortgage? What investments should you have? How many souls does it take? That kind of thing. So, you know, give us a shout at dead.fm@deadgentleman.com.
That's an email address.
Yep. Toss it on the comments of this podcast, or, you know, ask them away. Say, hey, I want to ask this on Dead FM. You can do that on our social media sites, Facebook and Google Plus and Twitter. And with that, I'm Don Early.
I'm Ben Dobbins.
And you're listening to Dead FM. Thanks for listening. This episode was directed by Don Early. Contributors to the show are Don Early, Andy Dobrowski, Scott C. Brown, Brian Lewis, Jimmy McMichael, and Chris Dupenthaler. Dead FM theme song is brought to you by Steve Wolbrecht and Sean Bendixson and the Bendixson Brothers. Don't forget to subscribe dead.fm. Hit the subscribe button whether you're on iTunes or RSS.
Now that's a goddamn podcast. I'm a hound dog, don't you know? Flying on the water plane, guess I can't.